Prabhupada would sometimes, he would give classes and he would get it with his watch, you know. It's just like now. It's 10 minutes after 12. In 5 seconds. He'd be on the Vyasasana. I remember New Dwarka. I remember the manor. He would do like that, you know. And he would say, no matter how much money you have, you can never get that back. It's gone. It's already gone. Now it's 15 seconds. So he would preach like that. He would look at his watch and say, time is that valuable. Once it's gone, you can't reclaim it, right? And it just goes on. Never stops. And I was 20 years old. And I was Prabhupada's servant. I've been a devotee for a year and a half, chanting. You know, it was the high point of my life. Chanting rounds, following principles. There was nothing, everything was wonderful. But I didn't understand. And I would always think, well, we're eternal. So if that time goes by, how is it going to hurt? Because we're here eternally. This body's temporary. You know, I heard it from him. I don't know it still, but I could understand that the body was temporary, but we're eternal. I kept thinking, what is the big deal for time to be going by? Because we're eternal servants of Krishna. We're chanting Hare Krishna. It's wonderful. In every lecture he would say it, and I would always in my head, I would think, and I never asked Prabhupada questions, you know. That's another thing I learned as a servant. Because sometimes some of the questions you ask might be, you know, as we say, it's foolish questions. Sometimes people would ask questions and Prabhupada would look at them, just shake his head and keep walking, you know. So I never wanted to ask a question and have Prabhupada. And I learned that if you were around long enough, somebody would ask your question for you. Given enough time, someone would ask that dumb question so you didn't have to. So I didn't ask that question. Never asked it in a class. Never asked it. I asked him like two questions when I was with him over two-year period. I asked him two questions. So anyway, I would always wonder what that big deal was. So then I found out. And I didn't even realize it until I started writing. It was 20 years later. It was 1996. And I was remembering these very words Prabhupada said about time. Now so many minutes have gone by. And you can't reclaim them for all the money in the world. And what was I left with? I'm writing stories about Prabhupada. And he's been gone for 25 years now. We're all here, that's why we're here. Not the only reason we're here, but many have been called to come to speak about this. So Prabhupada left 25 years ago. And I realized I became a devotee in 1971. And 6 years later he was gone. And during that time it was like eternal time. See, and this is what we think when we're young. You know, we think everything's just going to go on. We're going to be healthy all the time. I'm going to have lots of energy and be enthusiastic, and our Krishna consciousness is just going to flow so nicely and easily. And then all of a sudden, the people that mean so much, that carry you in Krishna consciousness, and they go away. And then you're left with their instructions, right, and that separation. So that's very difficult. So I said, actually, here I'm... They invited me to the manor to be there for Prabhupada's disappearance day. So I'm leaving here right after Govardhan Puja. But, actually it's, anyway, Krishna's arrangement. But for us, it's not a question of a festival. Prabhupada's disappearance day, and of course everything to do with Srila Prabhupada is eternal and is blissful. Just like he said, appearance and disappearance, there's no difference. But for when you had Prabhupada right before you, and you could speak with him, touch him, and then he disappears. So then I understood what it meant, that time factor. Okay? So we're in this world, and that's what Prabhupada's point was. You have this body, you have a human form of life, you use it very wisely. Because you don't know what's going to happen at the end of your life. You don't know how your end will be. We see so many now deaths happen amongst my god brothers and god sisters and even some younger. One can be taken away so quickly. So it's very important to use every second in Krishna consciousness. This was always his point. I didn't understand it then. I still don't understand, but I do understand that Prabhupada is left from my vision. So that's not a nice vision to have. So anyway, let's go back to Radha Damodar Temple. So Prabhupada just chastised me. So now I would welcome those chastisements every day. If Prabhupada would only be here to chastise me. But in the same way, this is how you show love. Prabhupada told me that once. He said, service is love. That's love. And tell that story. I had been with Prabhupada. This was when I was with him. First time I was with Prabhupada for 16 months. Then I was separated for 8 months. I got married. And I had left. So anyway, first time was 16 months. So after about 13 months or so, I was struggling, traveling. So whatever reasons, I was having difficulty. And as Prabhupada was traveling around, I was just feeling very kind of depressed and morose, you know, in myself. I wasn't chanting very nicely my rounds, sleeping too much, so many things. And we'd just come to Los Angeles, New Dwarka. Prabhupada would come to the... Whenever Prabhupada arrived at a temple, you know, the airport at any temple, it was just... The whole airport became the spiritual world. Prabhupada, flying with Prabhupada was just, you know, everything about it was so wonderful. Seeing Prabhupada outside of the temple was some of the really sweet things, because it was different. He was outside, you know, he was in their world, you know, it was not in the temple, not in Vrindavan, what we knew as the transcendental realm, but it was in airplanes, in airports, you know, in traffic, things like that. So to watch how Prabhupada did things was fun. Like I say, on the airplanes, Prabhupada always sat at the window. And again, he was very regulated there too, so you know, when you fly, whenever on takeoff and landing, they always put on fasten the seatbelt. So whenever the plane, you know, they would announce, we're going to go into descent, we're going to be landing in, you know, LAX airport, like that. So then they would put the light on. So as soon as they put the fasten the seatbelt light on, Prabhupada would get up. And that's when he would go to the bathroom. So he would do just the opposite of what they were asking him to do. So as his servant, so now two of us would get up, because Prabhupada went to the bathroom, I accompanied him to the bathroom and waited right at the door until he got out, and then walked him back to his seat. Prabhupada, of course, he didn't care. Me, I was like, you know, I'd be all feeling uncomfortable, you know, because I was in the material world. So as we were getting ready, and that's what Prabhupada would do. He would do that. He would fix himself up. He would put tilak on after a long flight. So he had nice Vaishnav tilak on. And then when we would land, he would take the garlands and he would, you know, he would have me give him the nicest garland, and the rest he would say we would put on ourselves. So when we entered into the airport, we all looked like nice Vaishnavas, just like everyone does here, right? Tilak, dhoti, kurta, sari, like that. This is, Prabhupada liked this program very much. That simply by seeing one, you think of Krishna. So, and he presented himself all the time like that. He would fix his, what is it called? The bib, we call it. He would fix that. He would fix his bead bag around him. Everything just first class. Prabhupada did everything very royal, very regally. So then the plane would land. And then Prabhupada was never first out of the plane. So the people would start coming out now. In New Dwarka, just like this time in New Dwarka, hundreds of devotees, maybe a dozen mrdungas and kartals. And as soon as the plane lands, kirtan's going on. When the plane lands, now kirtan's really cooking, right? So now people start walking out. Now I'm always on the other side behind Prabhupada. I'm always in the airplane, so I can hear the kirtan, and Prabhupada can hear. And Prabhupada's smiling because he hears He hears his devotees chanting. He hears the Hare Krishna mantra being chanted so nicely by everyone. So he's smiling. He's always blissful. And people are walking out. So Prabhupada always, of course, like walks a little more. So always there's a gap, you know. So sometimes they're coming. So every time they see a gap, you can hear them. They're getting more excited because they think Prabhupada may be the next person coming out of the plane. So just building, right? This is the spiritual energy, that transcendental bliss, which are always, it's just building. Prabhupada just builds it up. Krishna is building it up. And the kirtan's going on. So anyway, these different gaps are there. So each time, and the kirtan's going on. So finally, of course, they see Srila Prabhupada. And effulgent. Everyone has the descriptions about Prabhupada. He certainly was effulgent. If nothing else, you know, you saw his eyes always filled with love of Krishna, and they always seemed wet. They always seemed full of compassion for all of us, and full of love for us, and love of Krishna. You know, you could see all that just looking into his eyes. If you didn't do anything else and you just looked into his eyes, you would see that, and you would know it was there. That he just was with Krishna, and he had such love for Krishna. And you could see he had such love for us. Just by looking, he didn't have to speak. He just saw it. Just the way he looked, you've become peaceful. He just puts you at peace. So many times people would fly thousands of miles to see Srila Prabhupada to ask him a question personally, you know. And then they would get into his room and they would sit there and he'd be talking a little bit, and they didn't have anything to ask him anymore because they had no problems anymore. This is the potency of, you know, being in front of the pure devotee. All your problems, because our problems are always material. There are no spiritual problems. Right? Spiritual life, you don't have any problems because we just carry out Krishna's will. You just try to serve the spiritual master in Krishna. And whatever problems are presented, we see that as more nectar. Krishna is getting me to surrender even more. Because if you do work through the problems, you advance even further in Krishna consciousness, right? The more we can do under the more difficult situations. Right? Krishna benedicts us. So, just to see those eyes, you know, when he would have his cane and there were beautiful garlands or two or three around them, down, all the way down, long garlands. And Prabhupada would walk out. So then they would see him. Now, you know, most of the people just hit the deck, you know, offering a and the kirtan leaders are still chanting and leading kirtan. Everybody's offering obeisances. Then everybody gets up and the whole place is just up in the air. People aren't, you don't even see them touching the ground. I saw this one picture in the devotee's room in Philadelphia. Actually, I gave it to them. Of their spiritual master was in it, Ridayananda Maharaj. And Prabhupada's walking in L.A. in the airport, and no one's touching the ground in this picture. I mean, literally, no one's touching. I guess there's a kirtan going on, however it is, but Prabhupada's, and you just see all these people are up in the air, but there's no blur in the picture. You just see people walking on air through the airport. So anyway, that's what it's like when Prabhupada would finally enter into the airport and get out of the plane, and the kirtan would just, and people would be laughing and crying and falling on the ground and screaming and chanting. So this one particular day, I'm right behind Prabhupada, and I'm just walking, carrying a bag, and just in complete maya. I'm not jumping up and down, I'm not chanting, I'm not doing anything. But I really missed it a lot. I wanted to be like that, but I just didn't. And here I am with Prabhupada, you know? Anyway, Prabhupada went, the kirtan was going on, and I see people I know and talking a little bit, a little smiling. So we got back to the temple, and it was late morning. And it was in New Dwarka, we got to New Dwarka. You do this a few times in different places. In New Dwarka, when he started walking around his room, and I was in putting things away, and he looked at me and he said, "So Shrutakirti Maharaj." Had a sense of humor, Prabhupada called me Maharaj. He said, "You like it here in New Dwarka?" He knew I liked New Dwarka a lot. I said, "Oh yes, Prabhupada, very much." He said, "Yes, it's very nice here." So we got back to the temple. So I just started doing, putting everything away, arranging everything. And I had to prepare, get the cooker ready for lunch, get ready to do his massage. And I was still feeling very sorry for myself. You know, that's Maya, you know, when you feel sorry for yourself, you know. You think, Krishna owes me happiness. He owes me happiness. I'm working so hard. Why aren't I in bliss? So I'm doing all this, getting everything ready, go into Prabhupada's room, put the mat down, get Prabhupada's gumshoe. I'm like, gumshoe. So now I'm massaging Srila Prabhupada. Ah, this is my first question I asked Prabhupada. It wasn't a question, actually, it was a statement. But it was kind of a question. I'm massaging his head. I'm massaging his back. Prabhupada, you could massage his back sometimes. That's why I started stopping on my own. You could massage Prabhupada's back sometimes for an hour and a half and he wouldn't say anything. Anyone that's given massage knows that that's the essence of massage, and you put lots and lots of energy into that. And he told me, he said, you can massage my back as hard as you want. And I said, okay. So after he told me that, each day I was massaging, and I'm massaging hard. And I was young and moderately strong, I thought. And I started massaging his back harder and harder each day. And I was waiting for him to say, okay, hard enough. Never ever said it. And it became a contest only with me. There was no contest, but I was having a contest within myself, trying to get to the point where Prabhupada said, okay, don't do it harder than that. But he never said it. And in the meantime, I'm massaging him so hard, and Prabhupada weighed maybe 110 pounds or something, you know, 115 pounds. And he's sitting on a straw mat on a tile floor. So I'm pushing and pushing and pushing, and he's just sitting there like no one's even touching him. And I'm pushing his back and pushing his back. And by some mystic power, it didn't do anything. So each day, I'm trying harder, and I'm thinking... And he was just sitting like, he would just sit like this. And again, if somebody massaged me, starts pushing, you know, his back starts. But he just sat there, totally relaxed, enjoying it. And enjoying me being such a fool, you know, thinking I could move him. Guru means heavy, right? I was trying to move my guru to a different position, but I couldn't do anything. But he was enjoying it. He called passive wrestling, he said. He said, you're doing all the work and I get all the benefit. Of course, I got all the benefit too, touching Prabhupada's body. Otherwise, I have no business. I could not be in such a sacred place today, speaking amongst so many advanced devotees. So my only qualification that I can see is I rendered a little service and got to touch his lotus form and his feet. And otherwise, how else could I be here? So, passive wrestling, he said. So, anyway, that day I'm massaging his back. And the only time, it's funny, whenever Prabhupada talked to me during massage, I was massaging his back. I was always behind him when he would say something to me. And whenever I said something to him, I was behind him. So I was behind him. I was massaging his back. And I said, it was very difficult, but I was really feeling very pained. And I said, it was so difficult, Prabhupada. I said, all these devotees. And I saw they had such love for you. You know, and I said, I see everyone loves you so much. I said, and in the airport, all crying and dancing and chanting and jumping up and down, and they all feel such ecstasy in your presence. And I said, I don't feel it. I don't know how I managed to get it out, but I said it to them. It was a very difficult thing, exposing myself. There's nothing Prabhupada already knows me. But I was saying it to myself, and I was saying it to him. I said, they all have such love, and I said, I don't feel it. And he didn't say anything. So that was really bad. because I was hoping he would say something encouraging to me, because I wanted an explanation. I wanted him to say something, but he didn't say anything. And I didn't say anything more. So now we sat there for an hour and I'm massaging him. So now I'm feeling even worse. And he just stayed quiet the whole massage. Nobody came in, no Sanskrit editors, no secretaries, just Prabhupada and myself. And I couldn't think of anything else to say, so I didn't say anything. And I just kept massaging and just doing my service, massaging and massaging. So, massage finished. Prabhupada got up, went into the bathroom. I laid all his clothes out on the bed. I arranged a tilak on his table. Right, his mirror, opened up his mirror. That was part of getting it ready. You didn't just put the mirror there. You opened up the mirror so that it was ready for him. When I put the clothes on his bed, he used to button two of the buttons, so he'd just fit it over his head, and there'd just be two more. So then, I went back into my room, the kitchen. So now I have to prepare the cooker. So I'm mixing the vegetables, make a chaunce, as he showed me. You made a big chaunce. So you put some of the chaunce in one wet vegetable. You put some chaunce in the dal. And then you had a little chaunce left in the cooker lid. So then you could throw something vegetable in there. So one chaunce was good for three different things. So, got that ready. So then start rolling chapatis. Anyway, I'm just doing everything like I'm supposed to do. So then, Prabhupada puts his tilak on. He says, Gayatri. So I bring his plates in. And as I told you, then one back and forth bringing him chapatis. He still hasn't said anything yet. But I'm doing my seva. So then he got all finished. I took his plates, go back, wash his plates, and distribute the prasadam. It was another one of my favorite activities, was distributing Prabhupada's remnants. And I was always, one of the things they say about me is that I was not didn't have an agenda. They say Shrutakirti, as Prabhupada's servant, didn't have an agenda. But I did have some. I always had, everyone has an agenda. I had an agenda, but I always used to like to find people that were like myself who weren't big Sankirtan devotees who used to always get Prabhupada's remnants, and the sannyasis who got Prabhupada's remnants in the temple. So I would always just look for the brahmacharis and brahmacharinis that were working hard in the temple, and I would favor them. I would look for them to give Prabhupada's remnants to, you know. So I would do all that. So then Prabhupada would take nap. So then he called me into the room after his nap. I heard the bell ring. So of course I ran into his room, offered obeisances. And he just looked at me. He said, so do you like your service? I said, yes, Prabhupada. He said, that is love. Then he smiled. He said, they may all jump up and down at kirtan. He said, anyone can jump up and down. He said, but service is love. He said, so you just continue doing your service, he said, and everything will be all right. So he was very kind. Of course, they were all doing much more service than I was at the time. But in that way, he pacified me. And I saw that service is love. And in separation from Srila Prabhupada, what else do we have but to serve him and show our love? Otherwise, if we go off, Prabhupada's left, just go off now. I can't work with my God brothers. I can't work in this ISKCON anymore. It's too difficult. This ISKCON, she said, is his body, his very body, right, his society. So how's that showing love? So that's our business, is to try to continue to serve Prabhupada and show our love. And whenever we're inspired, we can jump up and down too at kirtan. That's also nice. So, how are you, Maharaj? Is it okay? Anyone want to stand up and stretch a little bit? Everyone all right out there? Did we continue on, or would you like to do something else? We're still in 1972 at Radha Damodar Temple. So then there were some really, really sweet things happened there at Radha Damodar Temple. For me, being with Srila Prabhupada was just very, very nice. It was, like I say, that 1 month that I was there was one of the most wonderful months in my whole life to be in Vrindavan, to be at the hub of the wheel of the spiritual world with Srila Prabhupada, right next to Prabhupada in his quarters there. I had no idea, you know, how fortunate I was to be in such a situation. But I was there. And Prabhupada was just so wonderful. So many things were going on. I remember one day, devotees, of course, Guru Das and Jamuna, and they were there in Vrindavan. They were temple president, his wife. They were doing lots of things there. Before Prabhupada had come, the year before they were there, Prabhupada wrote them a letter and said, in my quarters, you would find, Prabhupada had so many papers in one of his trunks. It had all his activities of his previous life, his business activities, so many papers about his business and everything. And he told them to destroy his papers. So they were telling Hayagriva how Prabhupada had given this order. And he said, well, what did you do? You didn't destroy them. They said, we had to, Prabhupada said to destroy them. They said, but we looked at a lot of them before we destroyed them. And it was amazing, they said, these papers, that Prabhupada detailed everything that he did, every purchase he made. We're talking, this was from some of them were from the 1940s, 1930s, all his transactions, and even his personal transactions. If he would buy a hand of bananas, it cost 5 pice, he would write it down there, purchased bananas, 5 pice, purchased paper for, purchased this, you know, money coming in from this, everything he did. See, this was the way Prabhupada dealt with all his activities. This is Krishna consciousness. And see, that's, again, this is another thing, contamination we have, is sometimes we become a devotee and we become very casual in Krishna's service. Yeah, it's, everything is Krishna's. And in the temple, sometimes the money comes in without recording, one would spend it. This was never Prabhupada's program. Every penny that came in, every paisa was recorded. Every paisa that went out was recorded. So this is the kind of things they saw, Prabhupada, the care he took in everything he did. And it wasn't that he was obsessive, but he just recognized that everything belonged to Krishna. Someone asked him that. How does it mean that a devotee sees Krishna everywhere? I mean, is he right in front of your face? How can you see anything else? I mean, what does that mean? Seeing Krishna everywhere, at every moment. Seeing Krishna in everything. And Prabhupada said, you see those shoes there by the door? What do you see? And he said, oh, they're Swamiji's shoes. He said, well, it's like that. The devotee sees everything is Krishna's. So that's how we start. Right? This is very simple to start. Everything belongs to Krishna. And Krishna is in everything. So if everything is Krishna's, then we have to be very careful. Even our own bodies, as Prabhupada said. Prabhupada worked very hard to keep his body in good top shape to serve Krishna. So, but very simple, he says, he sees that's Krishna's. Tree belongs to Krishna. Nothing is here for our pleasure. It's all Krishna's. So in that way we serve. So there at Radha Damodar, I was there. All of a sudden I had been cooking for Prabhupada every day. And now I didn't have to cook because Jamuna, in many places, sometimes Malati would be cooking. Palika would be cooking for Prabhupada. In India, Prabhupada had expert cooks, so there was no need for my good American prasadam anymore. So the one day I was there, I actually started chanting a lot of rounds during Kartik that month, which was nice. I would sit on the veranda between Prabhupada's sitting room and the kitchen while he took prasadam. So it was about the first day there. Oh, I'm sorry. I was talking about Gurudas and these items in Jamuna. So they took them all to the Jamuna River. And they took bath in the Jamuna. And then they went back to the river's edge and they set them all on fire. All these things. But Prabhupada didn't want him. Because it was previous to his sannyas. He wasn't interested. Everything after that, he was very interested in his collecting everything he had written. But it was very interesting to see how Prabhupada led even his life in business, how much careful he was with everything he did all the time. And then there were different times, of course, the monkeys were there. They were always creating havoc. We know in that area, Sevakunj, monkeys, so many rascal monkeys, Prabhupada said. Such rascals, Prabhupada said. Well, one time he was sitting in his room. Where's Yadubar? His wife, Vishaka, and Jamuna. They each had a pot with sweet rice in it that they were bringing to Prabhupada. I agree with telling the story. And he said, Prabhupada was sitting in the room and they each had a pot and they were walking towards Prabhupada's room with the sweet rice and a monkey jumped right down in front of them. So Jamuna threw the pot and screamed, and started running away. And Jadubara's wife, Vishaka, she just covered it with the sari and just continued to walk in Prabhupada's room. And Prabhupada was laughing and laughing. And she got into the room and he said, "This is a study of two natures." And Jamuna and Gurudas, they were there so long, they were spending so much time in Vrindavan that they would look at the monkeys. You see, you know, monkeys, you have young ones, you have old ones, you have males, you have females, you have the head monkey, and you know, you can see the leader. So they started to see all the different monkeys and the different qualities that they had, the different characteristics. And they started to name them according to the names of their god brothers and god sisters in the San Francisco temple. Depending on what the monkey was like, they tried to figure out a similar characteristic in their god brother, and they would name the monkey. So they had names for all the different monkeys. So when Prabhupada was there, there was one monkey, the female monkey, would come to class every day, she said. And it would sit in the tree with its hands folded and would listen to Prabhupada give class. And when class was over, it would just leave and go on with its monkey business. But it would sit and listen to class. And there was one monkey that would come for prasadam. She would give remnants to the monkey, whatever scraps or whatever. Jamuna would give the monkey remnants every Tuesday and Thursday. It would come only those 2 days of the week. Tuesdays and Thursdays it would come. And it would come up to the bars on the window. They were living up on the second floor above Prabhupada's quarters. Prabhupada was on the first floor. And she would give it and then it would go away. So after Prabhupada was there during Kartik, after some days, there was so much activity going on down there that they moved Prabhupada upstairs to Gurudas's and Jamuna's quarters because it was quieter up there. So Prabhupada was up there and then Jamuna thought, "Oh my God, this monkey," you know, because if you didn't give the monkey prasadam, it would throw a fit, you know, and start shaking the bars like that. So anyway, she realized it on the one day, or the Tuesday or something. So Prabhupada was in his room, and 12:15 came along, and Prabhupada was sitting behind his desk, chanting. So this monkey went up to the bars in Prabhupada's room, And so Jamuna went upstairs. So she's just watching. She didn't want to disturb Prabhupada and just wanted to see what happened. So sure enough, when the time came, the monkey went up there and it puts itself on the bars. And just then, and it made a little, monkey noises. So she heard Prabhupada starts making some similar noises back to the monkey. So now she's really fascinated and she's watching. So then the monkey starts shaking the bars and squawking, you know, and monkey talk, just making all these noises and squawking. So Prabhupada starts talking back to the monkey in monkey talk. She said he was talking and couldn't understand anything he was saying. Well, it wasn't Hindi, it wasn't Braj, it was monkey. You were like a monkey, Prabhupada was talking. So Prabhupada started talking back, so then the monkey started shaking and it started, you know, wiggling its ears. They do this thing with their ears, you know, and it started shaking its ears and all. So then Prabhupada continued to talk to the monkey. She said then after a few minutes of talking back and forth, the monkey left. So after the monkey left, Jamuna went into the room. And she said, Prabhupada, what just happened? And he said, I just told that monkey to stop bothering the devotees here at the temple. So he left. So he left. So then, so the one day I was sitting there, this was my first day. So I didn't have to cook for Prabhupada. I didn't know what to do with myself. So I just sat on the veranda and I was chanting. Then I saw Jamuna. Prabhupada was just, she was cooking on a coal stove, just a small bucket stove. And she's rolling chapatis. I saw her rolling chapatis. I was just watching from the door. So then she brought him his plate. So for some reason, I have no idea why, but I just got up and I walked into Prabhupada's room as he was taking prasadam. I guess because I was just so used to just going into Prabhupada's room and bringing him chapatis, I just walked into their room there at Radha Damodar Temple. And I offered obeisances. And immediately Prabhupada looked at me and he said, have you taken prasadam? And I said, no, Prabhupada. He said, come sit down. He said, take prasadam. And I said, no, Prabhupada. I said, I can't do that. He said, no, if I say, Prabhupada would always say, if I say you can do it, you can do it. And again, I said, no, Prabhupada. He said, it's okay if I say you can do it. He said, sit down, take prasadam. So there I was right next to Prabhupada in Radha Damodar Temple, in Prabhupada's sitting place. And I sat down. And that was the last time Prabhupada told me to do something that I said, no, I can't do that. Whenever he would offer me something, I would always just willingly accept it. One time I put up a fight, little, very small fight. He offered me a pair of shoes that he had worn. That's what I said. He offered me a pair of shoes. I said, no, Prabhupada, they're your shoes. I can't wear your shoes. He said, if I say you can wear them, you can wear them. I said, no, Prabhupada. He said, it's okay. So then immediately my mind thought, wow, of all the things in the world, Prabhupada's shoes. So I took them. Of course, they didn't fit. They didn't fit me, so I didn't wear them, fortunately for me. But anyway, so I sat down and Jamuna served me. And it was the first time I had eaten, which she had prepared, or anyone had prepared in India. She was the first cook who was expert. So I was sitting right next to Prabhupada, and now she's serving Prabhupada, and she's serving me and bringing chapatis like that, one at a time, and I'm eating with Prabhupada. Right there in the hub of the wheel of the whole spiritual world, sitting there with Prabhupada. And I had no idea what I was doing, but I just felt so happy that Prabhupada had given me this opportunity. And I still feel so happy that I had this opportunity once to sit with Prabhupada like that at Radha Damodar Temple and take prasadam. And I was eating and I put the first mouthful in and it was the most incredible thing I'd ever put in my mouth in my life. I had never tasted anything like it. So for 1 month, I got to eat like that, what Yamuna was cooking. And I never tasted anything so nice. But she was definitely sent to cook for Srila Prabhupada like that for some time. She cooked such wonderful prep. Everything was just first class. So now I'm eating very happily, and Prabhupada's taking said, and he looks at me and he says, "So," he said, "do you like?" I said, "Oh yes, Prabhupada, very much." He said, "So tomorrow you can cook for her and serve her prasad." It didn't happen, and it would have been not good for her after I saw what she was eating. It wouldn't have, but the idea was there. Prabhupada gave me the understanding. See, this is, as he said, this is Prabhu. You know, we always do this. We always call each other Prabhu. Prabhupada said that. We call each other Prabhu. And we say, "Prabhu, will you go get me this? Prabhu, will you..." We're calling him Master, and then we're engaging him in our service. So Prabhupada wanted to show that this is Krishna consciousness. Not that we simply are busy accepting service from our Prabhus, but all we serve them. It's okay, we accept some service, but also you have to serve your Prabhus. So he showed me right away, you also serve her. It's not that she's simply serving you and you're sitting back happily accepting service. Yeah? Because we're all servants. Yeah. So right away he showed me. So then the rest of the time, that was the one day Prabhupada gave me. Somehow or other, I was given that opportunity, and I am very thankful Prabhupada allowed me in that spot to take prasadam with him. Prasadam I took with him at life members' places, you know, on several occasions, but that was very different. That was just very special. So then, we're there, and one of the other thing was we had Brahmin thread. You know, his Prabhupada servant, you know, used to have to change his Brahmin thread. So we used to, when we do on Ekadasi or full moon, there was one time you would put Prabhupada's a new thread on the table and he would pick it up and chant, just like he did when he was making his Brahmin initiates. He would put the thread with his thread and chant a Gayatri mantra on it. So when he changed threads, which we did every month or so, I was with him for 2 years, and he would always leave his thread on the table. And then I would give it to Sankirtan devotee, book distributor, anyone. You would give it to whoever the first person, you would give Prabhupada Mahaprasadam Brahmin thread. So anyway, when I was in New Vrindavan, I had got second initiation in about May of 1972 in New Vrindavan. So I was just a devotee for 1 year. I got my Brahmin initiation. So then I went to New Vrindavan back again. So New Vrindavan was very austere place. It was like kind of almost like living in India. We got dysentery there. We had no running water inside the temple. And we worked very hard. And I remember getting back there and we had to bathe outside. So one of the things they had made at Bahulaban was there was a little creek that ran through. So they dammed it up in one spot. And we would bathe there, whatever, 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning. So when... that's when you got to see that the moon was an important planet. Because if the moon was full, you had a little bit of light so you could see yourself bathing. Otherwise, you would be in darkness. So you began to appreciate Krishna giving us the moon, Chandra. You have to appreciate the planet, right? Chandra there giving us some light. Because there was no lights outside of that. Anyway, one morning, I had just gotten my Brahmin thread. I was Brahmin. And that was a very, very wonderful thing to get Brahmin initiation. I remember in 1971, Brahmins, they were definitely worshipable people. They, you know, we prized. And when you had a gathering of the Brahmins saying Gayatri together, you know, you just thought they were all going to just rise up off the ground. I remember these like festivals, like Janmashtami festival, you know, there might be 100 devotees and 5 people were Brahmin or something. So just to watch them chant Gayatri at noon, you wonder, what are they saying? You know, what's that all about? You know, a secret mantra. Who doesn't want a secret mantra? And they had it. So when I finally got it, I was very happy to have the secret mantra, Gayatri Mantra. So I was bathing one morning in the dark. Now I was worshiping the deity. You know, as soon as you got your Brahmin thread, you were on the altar because there were not very many Brahmins. So immediately you were put into deity worship. Radha Vrindavan Chandra. I got to serve Radha Vrindavan Chandra, who's still there in New Vrindavan mercifully. Put up with a lot over the last 30 years. And anyway, I put their plates down and I went to say Gayatri Mantra and I didn't have a thread. My thread was gone. After days, my thread, you know, that I wanted so much, all of a sudden it had disappeared. It disappeared in the creek where I was bathing, throwing water over me in the dark, muddy water in New Vrindavan. Oh, I thought, my whole life was finished. I literally there, I was crying. I lost my Brahmin thread. I went back when the sun came out. I was digging through this mud, trying to find my thread, my connection with my spiritual master. I couldn't find it. I was in total depression. Anyway, Kirtanananda said, just make another thread, you know, no big deal. But for me, it was a big deal. So anyway, we made a thread with some string and I had a thread back. So I always thought about that, you know, it was the thread Prabhupada had given me and never got the transfer. So now I was his servant. And of course I could have just, if I really wanted to, I could have asked Prabhupada directly, say, please chant. Could have told him my silly story and asked him to chant on the thread for me. But I didn't do that. But when I had this opportunity with the changing of Prabhupada's threads, I thought I'll just take his old one, which he's been chanting on hundreds of times, you know, of his Brahmin thread. Super, super thread, you know. So, it was another, you know, this is what you do when you have nothing to do, your mind. Young devotee sitting there chanting in Vrindavan, just thinking all these things, you know, how you can. So, anyway, that day, I did everything I arranged, like I always do, put everything out on Prabhupada's desk as Tilak, and I laid the thread. And I know when Prabhupada's done, he's going to go into this room, take prasadam, and I'll go in that room and take his thread. And then I'll have my Gayatri. I'll be endowed again as a Brahmin. So I sat there on the veranda and I'm chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And I'm watching Prabhupada. I'm waiting and watching anticipation get my new Brahmin thread. Prabhupada chanted on again. So finally Prabhupada finished and he gets up and he goes, walks by the veranda and I offer obeisances. Whenever he passed by, always offering obeisances. And he went into the kitchen. So as soon as he went into the kitchen, I went into his sitting room and I picked up the thread. And I went right back out on the veranda and sat down. I was going to put it on and chant. And I looked at the thread and he had broken every string on the thread, all six of them. I don't know if he did it one at a time or he did it all at once, but it was completely broken. I sat there and I thought, that's okay. And I sat there and I tied knots together. All six threads, I tied one knot for each one knot, six times. I had time, Prabhupada's taking prasadam. So I did that. So just as I'm getting done, Prabhupada's walking back out. I put the thread in my pocket. I'm doing all this secret stuff. I offer obeisances again. And I sat up. And Prabhupada stopped right in front of me. And he said, so that thread, Brahmin thread, he said, my old one? He said, yes, Prabhupada. He said, you can bury it under that tulsi plant. And I said, yes, Prabhupada. He never said anything like that. Never. I was giving away threads all the time and never broke any threads, never did, but this thread, because I wanted it. And I didn't have the decency to ask my spiritual master for what I wanted. He was torturing me. And then he walked into his room and sat down. And I know I didn't bury it under the... I didn't follow his instruction. I just put it on and chanted my God. And he knew it too, you know. He always knew everything I was doing. And he always knew I was just this young little fool. But anyway, later on there was another, we'll tell that, because this all Prabhupada wanted you to do was be truthful with your spiritual master, you know. As he told one devotee, it's not good to try to trick the spiritual master. And that's another story. But he told me, and I could see, so finally the next time something happened, I wanted his chatter. I became mad after Srila Prabhupada's chatter, his gray chatter. I think it was the chatter he came over with. You think, Malati, did he have a chatter back in the early days, a gray chatter, Lohi brand chatter? Yes, so I have that chatter. And the way I got that chatter was earlier, this was 1974, 1975, when they had the opening in Krishna Balaram Mandir. So they tried to get it in Mayapur, when some of his sannyasis, Guru Kripa was the lead. And he wanted it. And this was earlier on, so this was before he went to Vrindavan, he was in Mayapur. So he made this elaborate plan to get his chatter. And he had all the different sannyasis get together and collect some money because he was going to get Prabhupada this nice, what's it called, Pashima? Pashima? Yes. Pashmina. Pashmina was very, very expensive, very first class. I think it comes from the hairs from this goat in the mountains of the Himalayas. There are only a few hairs you can get, and they put together this chatter. You can, one of the characteristics is very, very warm, very light. You can pull the whole chatter through a ring from a finger. You pull it through. It's so soft, but so warm and so expensive, right? Because it's very difficult to get. So anyway, his idea was he would give Prabhupada this chatter, and then he would get Prabhupada's gray chatter. Until that time, I never even thought about getting such a chatter. So he presented it, they collected, they got this Pashima chatter. And he gave it to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada looked. He said, oh yes. Everyone knows what Prabhupada's father did as a business, right? He was a cloth merchant. So he knew all the cloth merchants in Calcutta area there. So Prabhupada said, yes. He said, when I was a young boy, I would get one of these new ones every year. So he took the chatter and put it off to the side. So no one dared ask Prabhupada for his own. He just put it over there. Like, it was very nice. But then I had this seed began to fructify inside my heart. I thought, I'm going to get Prabhupada's gray chatter. So some time went by. Now I was a householder. So somehow or other I had little Lakshmi was there. But again, I was with Prabhupada as a householder. We went to Vrindavan. And we got to Vrindavan. And now it was turning into cooler time. So I thought, well, I need a chatter. But I just wanted Prabhupada's chatter. I had my mind made up I was going to get Prabhupada's chatter. But I thought I would buy one just like he had. Same brand, Lohi brand chatter, wool chatter, gray chatter. But of course, I always just sat there next to Prabhupada's room in Vrindavan. But the Matajis, they were always very nice to me, very kind to me. And they would do shopping for me. So one day, I gave, I don't know how many it cost at the time, maybe it was 100 rupees or something. You know, it wasn't very expensive. It's like 10 rupees to a dollar back then, like 1975, you know. And I gave to a Mataji, I believe it was Palika. She was going to Delhi weekly shopping. And I said, get me a chatter, just like Prabhupada's. I'm like, yeah. So she did. So I got the chatter, and one afternoon I walked into Prabhupada's room. I was 23 years old, and I offer my obeisances, and Prabhupada looks at me. Yes? Because he didn't call me, I just walked in. And I said, Prabhupada. And I show him, I've just bought this chatter for myself. Very nice, he said, very nice. He said, I have one like that. I said, but you're my spiritual master, and I was thinking that I should give it to you instead of for myself. He said, no, I have one. It was right behind him. You see, right here in Vrindavan, in Krishna Balaram, that shelf behind him. His chatter was right there behind. So I said, I want to give it to you. No, I have one. I'm okay, he said. I said, yes, but yours is old. And, you know, I thought I should give you the new chatter because you've had it for so long that you should have a new chatter. He said, no, my chatter is fine. And so this went back and forth, and I kept trying to say, but, you know, you should have the new chatter, Prabhupada. He said, no, mine is okay. So finally I said, Prabhupada, I was thinking if I give you the new chatter, you'll give me your old chatter. So then he smiled and he said, okay. But I can see he just wanted me to say what I wanted to do and not be a nonsense and try to trick my spiritual master. Right? So then he happily gave it to me. So I still have that chatter. He said that, the spiritual master, he says, when he's present, he said, you can use his items. Of course, except for his socks and shoes, you can use his items. But then after he leaves, he said, then everything becomes worshipable. So that chatter now, we use in the wintertime. One year when my wife was here, she bought this incredible murti of Srila Prabhupada, standing murti, the Bhakti Siddhanta. One time he did all these murtis, Prabhupada sitting in the rocking chair. And she was very attracted to this one murti of Srila Prabhupada standing, full-size murti, he's holding his danda. And she had him shipped over to the U.S. for me, so I could have Prabhupada full-size standing in our temple room in New Jersey, where we lived for 20 years. And Prabhupada made this very incredible trip to my house, and he was put in a box. Bhakti Siddhanta had him packed up, and he was flown over. And, of course, he was supposed to go through customs. But somehow or other, from customs, they sent him to this General Electric company. General Electric, not just electric company, General Electric is very big in military operations within the United States. There are very many military operations, GE. Anyway, it wound up in this city, in the state of New York, Schenectady, New York, it was called, about 3 hours, 4 hour drive from my house. So he went through customs, because I would have had to go through customs and pay customs and do so many things. But somehow or other, he got shipped to this GE plant. So they just had this box there, and they opened it up, because they were always getting things from other countries, government things, you know, very many. General Electric was known as, they had people working. They would specifically hire people from every country. And they had a program where they would sit together sometimes and they would discuss the different cultures from people of that country. So they would try to integrate so that everybody became familiar with people from whatever country they were from. So when this piece came in, of course, in General Electric plant, there were many Indians who were there, many scientists and things from India, who studied in India. So many of them said, oh, because they saw the saffron cloth, they saw the danda, they saw, and they said, oh, this is a saint. This is a deity of a saint from India. And it had, of course, our name and address on it. So they called us up, where we lived in New Jersey, and they said, we have this saint of yours. Does it belong to you? My wife said, yes, yes. And they said, well, if you want, you can come here and pick it up. So at that time I was working, and I had a van, because Prabhupada was, the box was big. So I stayed at work. My wife went with Govinda Dasi, who was her good friend, who happened to be visiting at the time, and they took this drive to Schenectady, New York, this 4 hour drive in the van. And they got there, and then the officer there in charge asked if they would please sit down and speak with everyone and the company there and explain who this Prabhupada was. So the minute Prabhupada came, again, this was like in 1992 or so, he was preaching to everyone. The minute he came off of the plane, he went to Schenectady, New York, and preached that. He had his devotees, his disciples, preach at this business to everyone that was there. So that's how he started his arrival here. It was very interesting. So then, anyway, just one other little story as long as I'm talking about him. He's still there in New Jersey. I've moved to Hawaii since my wife is temple president there, as many of you know. But just last year, I went because, of course, we take care of him and we put his chatter on, his chatter that he still has now. And put his hat on, change his japa beads. He had a bag. I just put a bag around his hands. So now a very strange thing happened with Prabhupada there also is that when I went to change his bead bag, he had his japa beads, but he put them between his fingers. And there isn't any way to get his beads between his fingers because there's not enough room without cutting the beads. Anyway, there's only me and my wife, so she swears to me that she didn't do it, and I certainly didn't do it, or I would remember doing it. But somehow, Prabhupada has his beads going through his fingers, chanting japa within his bead bag. So he's a very interesting form. Prabhupada has come and preaching and chanting japa there in the temple room. So I don't know. Maharaj, what do you think? You like I'm giving you this responsibility, huh? One thing you're arranging for me to be back by some 2:30-ish, is that still okay? So I can speak for a little more, it's like 10 after 1 if you want, I'll speak till 1:30. Okay. Should I stop here? I'm here until the 5th, you know, if you can squeeze in another opportunity somewhere. If you like. Okay, are any questions, comments, corrections, anything? Must be one question here, all these devotees. No one has any questions? Hare Krishna.
What was your second question which you asked?
Yes. Yes, what the second question was I asked Prabhupada. That's a good question. That's a safe question, huh? It was my question. I had been with Prabhupada for quite some time. And during one massage, afternoon massage, he was going over the mail with his secretary, and there was one letter from one devotee. He was a householder devotee. And he sent Prabhupada a letter asking if he could divorce his wife and remarry another woman. So in responding to that letter, Prabhupada said yes. So I was massaging Prabhupada and I became very disturbed because I had been with Prabhupada for so long and heard him personally talk about this marriage and no divorce. No divorce, he said. And if there was separation, there was no question of remarriage. Anyway, he stressed it very often. One accepts his duty, prescribed duty, stays with it. Very serious. One gets married, they should take it very seriously. Not that you should expect it to be always in some joyful union. So when he said that, I became very disturbed and I couldn't understand how so quickly he just said it was okay. And I didn't say anything all day. But all day I was thinking about it. And I waited till that special time during evening massage. And I was massaging him in the evening. And I spent, how will I ask him this question, you know? This is my spiritual master, and I certainly knew he was doing the right thing. I just didn't understand how it was the right thing so much. I had ideas, but I just needed for him to tell me something. So I'm massaging his feet, and finally I say, "So Prabhupada, you remember this morning you got that letter and that devotee asked about divorce and remarry." And before I could say anything else, Prabhupada said, "Oh yes, I told him it was okay." And I said, "Yes, Prabhupada, that's my question is..." He said, "In your country..." He said, "This is going on. People are getting divorced or getting remarried." He said, "It's very common in your country." So then I just stopped, and I'm still massaging, doing my service, and I'm thinking, you know, what's my next question? You know, what do you think? You know, if you're going to speak, especially to your spiritual master, you better think over your question many times. So it went through my head many, many times. So finally I said, "Yes, Prabhupada." I said, "But in our country also, meat eating is very common. Intoxication is very common." So I was being a little... I wasn't being argumentative. I was inquiring, submissively, trying to understand. And I said, "So that's also very common in the West." And Prabhupada said, "Yes. Yes, you're right," he said. He said, "Well..." Then his whole expression changed. And he had that look in his face that you would only see in your spiritual master. That compassion, you know. That compassionate look. And he said, "Whatever I told him, he was going to get married. He was going to divorce this woman and he was going to marry the other woman. So if I say you can't do it, then he commits a great offense. So I let him do it. So that way the offense is not so great." So I knew that was the reason, but for some reason I really needed him to tell me that. I wanted to hear, I wanted to be sure. But it just showed again, and it shows so much, I could tell so many stories. Like I was saying in the car, how Prabhupada would always say things to you in such a way that he could minimize your offense. Because sometimes weren't interested in doing what he wanted us to do. Prabhupada once said, a devotee said to Prabhupada, how we're all puppets, right? You notice, you hear this expression, we're all puppets in the hands of the spiritual master. And Prabhupada said, "Yes, you're all puppets." He said, "But I'm trying to make you go this way, and you're going this way." So, so, and he allowed that to happen. So his Prabhupada's mercy and compassion, we have no idea. So much he wanted us to do things, and he's tolerating us, tolerating so much we were doing, and still he's tolerating my endeavors, you know, as I try to do a little service and what I think is service. You know, he's simply tolerating, you know, minimizing the offenses. So I saw that in my own life so much. So that was my question, and that was his amazing and understandable response, is just trying to help us to become Krishna conscious, not accepting any offense. It's like Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, keeping everything to a minimum. Otherwise, how could we be here? You know, myself again, I'm so offensive, and somehow I'm in this most holy place with the assemble of most holy devotees. So I thank you all for spending all this time with me, sitting here patiently as I babble. I appreciate very much the opportunity to talk about my spiritual master and remember him. Hare Krishna, glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Thank you, Shruti Kirti Prabhu.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Let us offer our gratitude to Shruti Kirti Prabhu for his very wonderful, wonderful kindness. Bombay and Hawaii are like two rooms in the same house.
Come to Hawaii.